Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, how y'all doing? This is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. Eddie Pence is on vacation visiting his folks, so we're gonna just jump right into the interview. Our special guest tonight is a poet, writer, and actor. Please welcome to Wake Up Hollywood, Armand Kennard. Did I say that right?
Armand.
The accent was in the wrong place. Armand, you have a French name.
Yes.
How did you get a French name?
You know, my mom, she had a friend with the name, and I guess it kind of stuck to her head, and she was like, you know what, I'll just give that to my son.
And where did you grow up?
Right here in Los Angeles.
Right in the heart?
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
Born and raised.
Where'd you go to high school?
University High. Over on the west side.
That's right.
Out past UCLA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Man. So I went to Arcadia. I grew up here, too.
Nice.
We're one of the few. We're one of the implants that are not implants. But yeah, we are implants because we end up coming to the city, which is like this blend of so many other different cities, right? So I even feel like I'm an outsider coming from Pasadena. But you know what? It's nice that you're here in the mix.
SoCal.
Now, we're going to just jump right into it. What made you want to be a writer? What made you want to be a poet?
You know, it's interesting. Hip hop, I'll say, with the poetry. Writing started when I was about 10. I was just writing short stories in grade school.
Right.
And the teachers would allow me to read the stories to the class. So I was like, okay.
Wait a minute, I like this.
Yeah. Remember Show and Tell?
Yeah,
back in the day?
Those are my favorites.
So that's what, you know, was a part of the Show and Tell, you know, reading the short stories.
Right.
And so I was like, you know what? This is something really cool. I'm going to expand on this. So that was early on. And then with the poetry, that came along just from listening to hip-hop, you know, in the 90s.
And who specifically?
East Coast.
All right.
You know, even though I was born on the West Coast, a lot of my favorite poets, I call them poets, were from the East Coast. People like Tribe Called Quest,
yep.
Mos Def, Busta Rhymes. Well, Leaders in the New School, he was
right.
with First, and then
yep.
went solo.
What about Black Sheep? That's that same era.
Yeah. A lot of Craig Mack, throw that in the mix. Gangstar. Gangstar
right.
probably tipped me off first, because they did the end credits for Mo Better Blues,
yeah.
directed by Spike Lee, and they did
that.
A jazz thing.
Yeah,
credits
like, that's like Diggable Planets, man. I love all that stuff. Dos Effects. Dos Effects really, like, made me like listen to rap in a new way, because they were just spitting out rhymes and rhythmic, like iambic pentameter, in a way that I'd never heard. You know, it was just like, oh my god. It was in your face, it was raw, it was edgy. And same with Black Sheep and Tribe Called Quest. Like, they had the grooves. I mean,
oh, jazz,
man, some of that
all
stuff,
those jazz samples,
it's
Ali
still
Shaheed
some
Muhammad.
Of the best. Yep. Still some of the best music.
Yeah. And then Guru.
Yep.
You know, for some reason, I understood every word that came out of his mouth. I was like, man, I love the way he just, his diction and his delivery.
Yeah.
And I actually met him once back when I used to work in radio.
Wow.
At Power 106.
Dude.
Yeah.
That was my favorite station.
Yeah.
They were at my middle school graduation.
Okay.
And I just thought it was the greatest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was such a big hip-hop head, you know, so... yeah, man. Dude, I love Power 106. That's
yeah,
crazy.
That was back in the days. I worked there from 99 to 2007.
That was a good era.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Tupac, B.I.G. were coming in.
Well, they had already left, actually, because Biggie died in 97.
Oh,
Tupac
right.
died
that's
in 96.
Right.
So I caught it right after that. And so that was actually the turning point of the music, actually. You know, it began to switch a bit, you know, because the golden era was pretty much 88 to 98.
Right.
So
yes.
when I got hired, it was like right at the change of the, golden age of hip hop. But yeah, I met Guru, and he actually signed my CD, Moment of Truth.
That's amazing.
And I was like, man, this is, I lost the CD. But yeah, he was probably the pioneer for me in my mind. And so then I started writing poetry right about 96. Is when I started writing poems.
Were you writing like long prose or kind of short?
Short and simple, you know, and I would share this stuff with my classmates. I was going to LA Trade Tech Community College, and
it was like
writing
a gift school, wasn't it?
Trade school.
Okay.
You know, they specialize in culinary arts, auto mechanics, and all that stuff. So, you know, I was going there and just going to the library and tossing out poems, and I would write them. Like, I would see someone like my friend Chelsea right here from China.
Hi, Chelsea.
And I would see someone like this, and I'd just write a poem about what she's wearing and then give it to her and walk off.
Be mysterious.
That's it.
Be romantic.
Sort of.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that kind of tipped it off right there.
And you weren't rapping.
Mm-mm. No.
Just writing poetry. It's interesting that rap got you into lyrics,
mm-hmm.
but then when you wrote lyrics, mm-hmm. you didn't want to put it to music. Why is that?
You know what? I don't know. Well, let's see. At the time, I was beatboxing. Me and my boy, Chris Leslie. Shout out to Chris Leslie. I love you, man. 25 years I've known him. But yeah, he would spit the rhymes and I would spit the beats. And then he was like, you know what? Why don't you bust a freestyle? Why don't you just go ahead? And I was like, nah, man, that's not me. And I didn't really start rhyming until like maybe 99, 2000. Hmm. But then I was like, it's not really for me. I'll stick to just Shakespearean, you know, I'll stay in that lane. I mean, I will spit every once in a while, but it's not my lane.
And you just don't have any desire to do it?
For play.
You'd rather just write.
Yeah.
And recite.
You know.
See how I rhyme that?
Write and recite.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you ever do spoken word?
Mm-hmm.
So you do kind of spit.
That's
lyrics.
A version. Yeah. They're all connected. I think it's all connected, really. You know, it's just you have ones with beats, ones without beats, and you kind of just go.
I love spoken word. I played a lot of like college conferences, and there's so many spoken word poets, and I love when they talk about something edgy, confrontational, and they don't. It's like abstract, and then it comes around to this. You know, this opinion, I guess you could say, because they show the side. They show both sides, and then at the end, they kind of like tie it into, like, this is the view. You know what I mean? So
right.
I love spoken word. And with your stuff, it's really, I mean, not to sound cliche, it's poetic. It's like you do a lot of emotive poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me some of your favorite writers or what made you kind of inspired by that. You said Shakespeare. That might be one.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I did Merchant of Venice back in 87, I think it was. But you know what? To be perfectly honest with you, the hip hoppers were my poets.
Mm, I like
that. They were my poets,
well, it's
man.
It's street, and it's like urban, and it's now, and it's to grooves that are just insane. Like, I think rap right now is, I mean, I don't understand the scene now.
Right.
Because I came from Dre, Ice Cube, Tupac, Notorious B.I.G., and all that East Coast rap, too, along with the West Coast, like N.W.A., all that.
Sure.
So it's disappointing to hear some of the rap now.
Mumble rap.
Yeah. Trap. I just not into it, man. It's
you know
it just
what?
Doesn't have groove to me.
That's true. I mean, that's what our parents were saying about hip-hop when it came out. They were like, what is this? Don't you like Marvin Gaye?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, every generation has their thing. But, yeah, the hip-hoppers, those were the poets that I followed. You know, when Tupac came out with Dear Mama, that really hit me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, he actually wrote something about his mother.
Right.
Okay, yeah, this is the direction I want to go right there. So, yeah. And I feel like, you know, any form of expression is poetic. You know, we're poets just by mere existence.
Right.
You know, our bodies is poetry. You know, me sitting in this chair is poetry. Chilling with you is poetry. Eddie Pence, happy birthday past, is poetry. So I know he's a Cancer, you're a Capricorn, right?
That's right.
I've done my homework.
You did your homework, man.
I
like it.
Yeah. I saw Fade Away. Fade Away is actually cool, bro.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. I listened. And I saw the interview with Frosty, Heidi, and Frank.
Yeah.
I used to listen to them.
Dude.
On 97.1.
Man, I actually played. Okay, so they were. I used to listen to them when they were on 97.1. And then they got canceled. And somebody told me they're still doing their show. So I emailed Frank. And I was like, man, you ever have a live performance on the Stay or Go? And he's like, we've never done it. And I was like, let's do it. And he's like, all right, we're doing the show from my house. So I went to Frank's house, and we did the whole show, and we got the highest rating, which was awesome. And then they moved to KLOS, and then when we played a Royal Seco, I'm like, hey, man, let's come back. And he's like, dude, we'd love to have you back.
I saw that.
They made us honorary judges of that segment. Nice. And it was crazy. It was super fun, and it was amazing to see the growth. Mm-hmm. That's something that's super exciting when you see somebody go from just like, you know, grassroots into the corporate market, and they still stay true to who they are. You know?
Right, right. Which I haven't been listening lately, but when I saw that on YouTube, I was like, I took memory lane because it was Howard Stern, Frosty, Heidi, and Frank,
dude,
and then Tom Likas.
Stern made me want to do this show.
Really?
He's the best interviewer ever. So, yeah. And he does his homework.
Yes, he does. He's a Capricorn,
we're
too.
We're making this about you. We're not talking about Stern. All right, so... Did you ever do open mics? How did you find your voice in the market that's saturated with hip hop and screenplays? And how did you find a voice to kind of maneuver and create and still have this point of view and perspective that you could stay true to that artist, you know, vibe?
Mm. Well, I have to thank my cousin for that, Jonathan Alonzo Picos. He was working in Watts, teaching kids over there, and they had a poetry event. And this was back in 2010, and I had never performed my stuff in front of an audience
before.
Like
a slam poetry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just an event for the kids, you know?
Yeah.
Get them motivated to write, and he had me perform there, and I was like, you know what? Okay, this is it. Maybe I should share and not just keep this stuff, you know, to myself. And then Mike the Poet, who I met, Mike the Poet Songson, a lot of people in L.A. within the poetry community know this guy. He knows a lot of people, and he actually kicked it off into another gear. And I met him while attending. Well, we worked together. That's how we met for Red Line Tours, because I'm a tour guide. And he used to work there. And so he was hosting an event at the Stella Adler Theater in Hollywood.
Yeah, I know where that is.
And so he was like, yeah, man, come through. Spit some. And that's that. It kind of just took off from that point. And I would just hit up all these different poetry spots, like the Poetry Lounge on Fairfax. The Last Bookstore, Beyond Baroque, and just all.
And now there's
spots.
Like this resurgence of speakeasies, and you know, this new renaissance of poetry. And how do you feel like? Do you think it's almost becoming too commercial? Do you still feel like it's still grassroots and it's still like neighborhood, you know, community kind of vibe? Or do you feel like it's getting too, you know, plagiarized and
flashy,
commercial.
Flashy.
Yeah. It's easy to see that in all anything artistic, you know?
That's true. Yeah, it's still grassroots. It's still, you know, community oriented. Depends on where you go, because there's so many different spots, you know. I think with Mike the Poet, his are pretty community oriented. You know, he has a real nice flow with his. Everybody gets on. You know, it's not like, okay, I'm going to make sure that these guys get on and no one else. You know, he's pretty generous, you know, because some poetry spots, you know, they have the MVPs that get the most focus. I'm not going to call out any spots, but anyway. But with Mike the Poet, it's been a good run in terms of that scene. And so that kind of sparked up another tipping point into the sensual poems, which I wasn't performing. And I was like, well, how can I get that out? And I was like, huh, maybe I'll just create a web series. And that's how the Book of Sultry came about.
Yeah.
So it all came all at the same time in terms of my cousin, Mike the Poet, and then...
And how long did it take you to start writing and shooting the Book of Sultry?
Well, let's see. The idea was developed in 2010, and then I put up two test episodes. Well, first I had the cast, because you've seen it. It's pretty intense for some people. Some people are like, you know what, that's nothing.
Right.
And some people are like, that's a little much.
Well, I like the gratuitous booby shot right at the beginning. That's going to grab attention. You know, I was like, man, that's going to be a likable video right away.
Yeah, very challenging to cast.
You're like, how am I going to get their attention right away?
Yes, that literally was it.
But you know what was cool about it? It was, like, I watched it, and everything is like a modern-day kind of Shakespeare short. Mm. Like, you're having the characters kind of communicate and emote all with poetry. It's not so much dialogue. It's prose. And I thought that was really cool. It was, like, showing you glimpses of, you know, the city life or memories or past, present, and future. You see the time continuum in there. But you also kind of... make it romantic. You make it, you know, about nature. And then beauty and they kind of like are married together. So I kind of thought it was cool. It's abstract, but also not at the same time. Mm. So what was your vision in kind of coming up with it and, you know, putting it into action and execution?
Just taking everything that was in my head as best as I could and putting it out in front of the lens. And that's always a challenge because sometimes it doesn't always work out.
And did you shoot it too?
Oh, yeah. Wow. I had help.
Wow.
I had other videographers and contributors, you know, my cousin and some other people as well. But the majority of the shots.
I'm sure they all wanted to be there for that opening shot.
Well, I had women film that stuff.
That's smart. That's smart.
I wanted a female eye for all the scenes with me and another woman.
Right.
And plus, it would create comfort for the woman that was in the scenes.
Right.
You know? So I figured, okay, I'll do that. And then the fellas would do all the other stuff. And of course, the scenic stuff is mostly me, you know, Los Angeles and that sort
of
thing.
You chose really cool spots. It looked like you were, parts of it looked like Long Beach. You know, like, it was awesome. Like, you just got like really cool scenes of the city that maybe not everybody else would know, but it's like seeing it, I was like, oh man, that's awesome. So, how did you kind of think about putting this all together into one complete vision that's, you know, set up into a series?
Mm. Well, you know, born and raised in L.A., true to my heart.
Right.
I wanted to show that.
Yeah.
You know, and everything here is poetic. And you just draw from the space that you're in.
Yeah.
And kind of this idea of taking that and fusing it with the sensual aspect and the spiritual aspect. You know, it's all poetic.
Right.
You know, you just combine the two. And, you know, the color images are real time and the black and white is in my mind.
Memories. So. Well, I felt like the black and white was also like memories in the past, right? And
yes.
It felt like some parts were, it felt like some things were shot in like filters, kind of were kind of spacing out the time of it that way. Is that, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, cool. So I got it.
Yeah, you did. And it's, I'm very impressed because most people just focus on one aspect, and we all know what the obvious aspect is.
I'm an artist, so like I look at art for art's sake.
See, I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's why we do this show. Let me ask you this. When you were editing, you obviously had more footage than you probably wanted or needed.
Yeah.
How did you kind of, I find editing to be the difference between good and great, the difference between indulgent and mature, the difference between artistic and just kind of weak, you know? Not to be harsh, but sometimes things can be just this too much.
Mm.
How did you make that decision to kind of trim it down or to just give it what it needed to propel the story?
Well, I wanted to keep each episode under 10 minutes. That's the goal. And also, I kind of went off a feeling. You know, the editing process is another form of telling the story.
Right.
You know, that's literally you're remapping the story in the editing room, which I didn't realize until I started, you know, doing this. And so I just kind of went off a feeling. Okay, I have a certain message for this episode. How do I best convey that? Okay, this scene, this shot, this. So I just went off a feeling, you know, for the most part. But and then season two. Kind of got heavier in terms of the editing process because I was taking seminars at the Egyptian Theater.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I was like, ooh, another tool. Because it was, you know, sound design, you know, cinematic interpretation, the length of the shot and how that affects a person's feeling.
Right.
You know, you don't always have to be linear. You can do things just to evoke a feeling and that's it. You know, you hold that shot for a long time on a certain image. Like I have one scene where a woman is talking about losing weight. And I just leave the camera on her belly because she's talking about putting on pounds on her stomach and how she doesn't like that. So while she's talking, I just put the camera there, let her talk. And it wasn't even scripted, that particular scene. It was just, so it runs about a minute and 10 seconds with the camera focused on. So things like that, you know, just really trying to force people to digest what they're looking at.
Well, it's also the imagery. You're kind of like painting words with the images, which is like, really, to me, the most important when you're making a film, it's like marrying the script or the screenplay or the words with images so that it completes or it just intensifies what's happening. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
One thing for the fadeaway music video that I learned is like we had so many different shots, so many different cameras. And when I first saw the director's edit, I was like, you know what? I'm not really stoked with this. Give me all of the camera footage. And I went through every single camera footage and wrote down times of all the shots that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And that's basically how we put it together. But yeah, it made me fascinated with the process. It's like knowing how to shoot, knowing what to scrap, you know, the, what is it, 24 frames a second, mm-hmm. knowing little mm-hmm. things like that, like how it can work where you're telling the story with the image, mm-hmm. you're showing, not telling, mm-hmm. but you're also using words to kind of be the story and drive things home. So it's like this finite amount of space to kind mm-hmm. of combine these great elements mm-hmm. to propel this story that you want to say. So my question, it leads me to my next question. How did you come up with the story just initially to put this Book of Sultry together, starting with the title, and then let's go through the entire story? Because I like that it's racy and it's romantic and it's poetic and it kind of has a perspective and, you know, it shows shots of Los Angeles. So how did you kind of come up with this story?
Thank you, my man. Well, interestingly enough, I was waiting to get a ride to a party in North Hollywood. Shout out Brianna. Hey, what's up? And as I'm waiting there at the North Hollywood station, a woman comes up to me and says, hey, have you ever thought of doing porn? And I immediately said no.
Right.
But she gave me a card and said, think about it. And I was like, oh, okay. She walked off. And I was like, yeah, porn's a little intense for me, but I am a sensual person and I love Prince.
Right.
Old school Prince.
He's my favorite.
Dirty Mind Prince.
Yep.
Controversy
yep.
Prince. So I was like, okay. And then I love curvaceous women. And at the time, this is 2010, so Ashley Graham had just went through her situation with her ads being pulled.
Right.
And so there was this rise of the curvaceous woman, and I was like, okay, cool. And then I had these poems that are sitting there collecting dust. Okay, take that and bring that into the mix. And then in terms of the title, The Book of Sultry, I don't even know how I came up with it. It just came to me, man. It literally just came. I have no explanation for it. And I just figured, okay, combine these poems that I have with my adoration of a woman, my sensual desires, and fuse that in. Take everything from my mind and put it in front of the lens.
But you did you rewrite some of the female monologues? Were they originally written for you to read, or did you kind of reframe it so it was like, okay, I'm going to have her say these?
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, I did reframe it. Yeah, I know exactly which one you're talking about. I wanted to, because, I mean, my spirit is feminine.
Right.
And that's the voice, and that's her. It's like, it's kind of hard to explain, but I'm kind of split in half, you know, female version, male version, and we're just playing within the scenes. And then there's the one with her talking about Alluring Thoughts, I believe is the name of the piece, where she's, you know, imagining a man, connecting to this man and being open to this man and not fearing her sexuality in the process. And so, but that's me,
right.
Female version. So that's basically what I did, is just, you know, because I'm very in touch with my female side, even though I'm very much masculine. Testosterone, yes.
Well, I think that's part of art. You know, it's like it shows you how to be tender. Mm-hmm. It shows you how to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It shows that there's strength in that.
Yes.
Prince, you brought up Prince. He's yes. one of my biggest influences. I was actually just wearing my Prince shirt today. but, you know, somebody like Prince, he kind of opens doors for the human experience, you know, mm-hmm. to kind of realize that, you know, it's okay to have these crazy erotic sides or crazy, you know, passionate sides or romantic sides, and they're all connected. Mm-hmm. And I think artists kind of open those doors for the rest of humanity to kind of feel like, oh yeah, it's comfortable for us to do this.
Exactly.
Because there's so much grip from religion and geography and mm-hmm. just so many, you know, different kind of philosophies, I think.
Very
so
true.
It's you kind of need artists to kind of break those doors wide open. Mm-hmm. So it's cool that you kind of were in touch with that and you wanted to, you know, kind of open that door for people to kind of liberate themselves a little bit, you know?
You said the word liberation. And, you know, I love the intelligent discussion about it.
Yeah.
Because this I don't have that often because
right.
people are still locked in their
right.
their minds, you know?
Of course.
It's hard to break free of that, I guess.
It's funny. It's like, you know, I think as an artist, you feel empowered, mm-hmm. but you also want to give the gift of empowerment through your art. But some people just, they won't receive it. They won't nope. get to that place. They mm-hmm. won't let themselves feel that because they have this maybe self-loathing, or maybe it's you know, control. It's they want to feel like they're in control, and mm-hmm. and I kind of feel like everything there are not a lot of things artistically that I think will surprise me, right. but the ones that inspire me are the ones that are few and far between.
Right.
And what I liked about what you were doing, you were showing pictures of Los Angeles, much like my music video did. Mm-hmm. You were showing a story, which was really about love and just observation and, you know, how beauty inspires you, mm-hmm. but also telling it in a story between two sides. Mm-hmm. So are there more characters in the Book of Psaltery? Like, does it, the message kind of spread and evolve? I only saw one episode. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it does spread. The first season was more of just my sensual desires played out for the most part. In the second season, I'm sent out to connect to different women. That's why it's called Harems of the Ardent. Another interesting title. I don't know how I came up with it.
I like titles, so it's good.
it just popped in there. So that one, you know, I'm just going, playing sort of like a counselor to these women who are ready to be liberated.
Right.
And I'm sent out to do this by my spiritual advisor throughout the season, 13 episodes. And then hopefully I'll get that third season in where it's just focusing on one woman for all 13 episodes and the connection of one-on-one intimacy and what that means.
And you shot season one and season two. How many episodes are there in total?
There's 26. So there's, yeah, 13 for one and 13 for two. And then we'll see what happens with three. That's another challenge.
So how long did it take for you to do all those episodes?
Let's see. I did two test episodes for YouTube in 2011, and they were both taken down. At that time, I guess YouTube was pretty strict.
Right.
And then I was kind of discouraged. And then someone said, Vimeo, you know, try that. You know, they're more loose. So I sent them to Vimeo 2012. And I was kind of cranking them out. The production kind of stalled a bit. Because, you know, in terms of finding people for the project was a bit challenging.
Right. That's always the chaos.
Mm-hmm. It'll halt you.
Man, I've been in a band for 15 years, and just having five or six people on stage, getting them all to the airport, getting them on stage, getting them out of the hotel. I mean, I can't imagine shooting something for years. Like, mm-hmm. when I watch movies, I'm like, how? I mean, I don't care if it's the money.
Yeah.
Besides the money mm-hmm. being thrown at all these people, just the organization to get all these people to show up mm-hmm. when there's everybody's got these different agendas, you know.
Yeah.
So kudos to you for doing 26 episodes. That is crazy.
Yeah.
Especially how long did it take you to shoot all of it?
Let's see. Well, for the scenic scenes, you know, it was bits and pieces here or there. So I was kind of cranking them out. Some in 2012, 2013. Pretty much that was season one. And then I submitted it to a festival, and then it actually got some awards. It got an award for producing and writing at LA Web Fest.
Awesome.
And that inspired me to continue, because at first I was just going to do it and be done, you know.
Right.
And then I said, well, let me see. And then season two started up right about 2014 through 2017, actually. So even a longer stretch for the second season, just because there were new concepts and ideas, and I didn't want to rush through it. And so, yeah, from 2012 till now, pretty much, is when they were released.
And then talk to me, like, we're going to shift gears a little bit.
Sure.
So the first thing I watched was the short that you did, Hard Money.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. It was so funny. How did you get involved with that? And, man, the casting of that was perfect.
Jesse Wayne.
Each character, just three people, but it was perfect. I mean, it was so funny. I mean, honestly.
Well,
that is definitely worth a gander as well. So talk to me a little bit about Hard Money, because it's just an interesting short.
No, it was a lot of fun. Shout out to Armin Siljkovic, who wrote the script, wrote, directed, produced, and Jesse Wang and Erica were my co-stars, and Erica Ross. And we, you know, we got together. It was about a, I want to say, 8 to 12 hour shoot, I think. And we filmed Jesse's scenes first and then mine second. So I was that emotion being annoyed. That was real.
Right.
But, he came up with the story. I actually met him, Armin. I met at a writer's group that meets up every Thursday. Mm. And through another guy named Dave Rosenberg, who I met working for the tour company. And then he said, yeah, come to the writer's group. I go to the writer's group. You know, they share their scripts, 10 pages each. And you give feedback, and Armin had this script. And he said, you know what? why don't you, you know, play this lead character here? And I was like, huh, okay. And then he had Jesse Wang come in. We rehearsed a couple of times, and then we put it on, and bam. And Armin, he works fast. Like, whatever he would bring to the group, he would shoot.
So you just shot it in one day?
Yeah.
How many takes did you do?
For his scenes, dang, I want to say, oh, I don't know, maybe about 8 to 10 takes for his scenes, and then for mine, maybe about the same amount.
Yeah, it was so fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just
like that.
Like each character, you can just see it just brooding and about to explode. It's like one's annoying the other, mm-hmm. one's negotiating, mm-hmm. one doesn't even want to just give in. And it's like the way you give in for a sale, it's just, it was hilarious because you know that that happens all the time. Mm. People are always haggling over silly, over a dollar, over mm-hmm. like, you know, something so trivial. And it happens every day. It happens mm-hmm. every day. So it was interesting to see just how you showed that story that I'm like, man, I've been in that situation. It's mm-hmm. like if I've sold something or if I've, you know, you just want to get rid of it and have it be painless. And it's never painless. It can be so simple, but it's never simple. It's
nope.
always convoluted, and there's haggle, and there's a little bit of a kind of a tug of war. So mm-hmm. you showed that so perfectly.
Yeah, that's Armin.
Do you have more shorts that you want to put together, or do you want to continue the web series? Like, where's your artistic vision kind of, you know, going from this point?
Well, Armin did mention another film that he wanted me to work on, but I guess he's still writing it, because Armin was the genius. I don't want to take any credit for that. Was his writing, Armin Sochkovic. You'll be hearing from this dude pretty soon, I'm sure. But for me, I have a feature film that I wrote called L.A. Mayhem, which is about two cops dealing with their emotions while on the job. And it sort of takes on that whole poetic-esque kind of feel, because yeah. it's, you know, cop stories are pretty generic usually, you know, car chases, courtrooms, and forensics and all that. So that's all removed. You know, it's just about the emotion of the...
Which they don't ever talk about, really.
Exactly.
Cops always have, they always have the hard shell. You mm-hmm, know, it's like, mm-hmm. that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to write this?
About 7 months.
Wow.
Yeah, 7 months. So right now it's still in the budgeting phase. I do have two other actors who've committed, Katie McDowell and Larry Ulrich. So as soon as we get that budget, I'm working some angles, yeah. and hopefully that'll crack off. Ideally, it would be nice to get this thing in the can by next year. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, as you crazy? Know. It's so crazy to put something like this together, like
mm-hmm.
from the writing of the screenplay to, you know, creating, you know, the budget, or
mm-hmm.
kind of getting people that will believe in it or support it,
yeah.
and then getting the actors and the cameraman and the director, like
mm-hmm.
to get everybody on board. To me, it's like such a feat. But then when you actually finish it,
yeah,
it's such a, like a, I guess the process is part of the enjoyment. It's part of the happiness.
Bingo.
Because the finished is never, it's the goal, but it's not necessarily what you feel is the reward. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? It's like
absolutely.
A whole process coming together. I feel like that every time I play music. It's like mm-hmm. such a pain in the butt to just get to rehearsal and
mm-hmm.
get the guys to learn their parts, or, you know, to focus on details or make arrangements. Or but then when you have these moments where it's like, oh my God, this is going to be so good,
mm-hmm.
that's like where you feel like you're in the moment. You're in, you're present, and you feel like a super creator. You know, it makes you want to do tons more.
Mm-hmm.
So right. do you ever feel like, once you finish the screenplay, you finished it,
mm-hmm.
are you already thinking about other projects, or are you focused on this and getting it to lift off?
Combination of both. Like, L.A. Mayhem is in the front, and then I'm going to start writing another one this year that I want to finish. I'm just kind of racking them up as often as I can. I have about 10 solid films that I want to get done before the end of this decade.
And you know what? I can't have a poet on the show without you reciting something.
Oh.
So what are you going to recite us?
How about a piece called Bra Games? I haven't done this in a long time. Some people may have seen me perform it on stage. Put the bras down, get the minds up. Who told you life would be better after boosting them up? Tricking my mind with those illusions, creating confusion. You want to be taken seriously, but vanity is your delusion. These habits were instilled at a young age. Treat them like animals and keep them in a cage. Keep them hidden, the human body is forbidden, but at the same time boost them up and create cleavage. Frustration increases when they are too much. Frustration increases when they are not enough. Put the bras down. Get the minds up. Who told you life would be better after boosting them up? Your satisfaction is temporary. It lasts as long as you're seen. Most of the ones you buy are not the right size, I mean. That bra you bought from the catalog or name brand spot. Your satisfaction is temporary. Take it off and let them drop. Society says they are evil when seen. Cover up. But at the same time, they use the image to sell products. They are two-faced control freaks using all types of ploys. Religious puppeteers control corporation toys. Put the bras down. Get the minds up. Who told you life would be better after boosting them up? A sensual vamp I am, using words to bring forth habitual scams. Being sultry is the nature of this. Let your eyes be a tram. The next time you see a breast fall out without a plan, just give a round of applause and think it is who I am. Enough of this game, preaching the body is equivalent to shame. Body parts should be drawn on walls, a new graffiti claim. Nipples nurture newborns to later become a man's aim. Embrace the notion, it is only a reminder of from where we came. Being fed by her, being calmed by her, being cuddled by her breasts.
Yeah, Armand Kennard. Bring it home. Where can people find you if they want you to act, write, recite? Do you have a website, IMDb?
IMDb, number one. Facebook, number two. YouTube, number three. Instagram, in development. Website, in development. But yeah, IMDb, YouTube, Facebook. I'm not hard to find.
And spell out your name because people are dumb.
Armand Kennard. First name, A-R-M-O-N-D. The D is silent. And Kennard, K-I-N-A-R-D.
Armand, you've been an amazing guest.
Thank you, man.
Honestly, we'll have to have you back.
Oh, thank you.
And
I'll
you know,
be on time next
for
time.
Any fans of the NK Band, we'll be in Milwaukee tomorrow. Ooh. We are opening for The Fray on the U.S. Cellular Stage, 6 p.m. to 7:30. We'll see you guys next week. Eddie will be back in town on behalf of Armand, Eddie, and Chelsea, correct?
Yes.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.